can do this much faster. It's about the real purpose of life. And Prabhupada says it is to go back home, back to Godhead, live with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dance with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and eat with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says, these are different items of ananda, spiritual happiness, in spiritual variegatedness. As devotees, it's very important to desire to go back home, back to Godhead. In our Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 subjects which are discussed in detail. And one of the subjects is called moksha, or liberation from material existence. Many times we have heard that a devotee should not really desire moksha or liberation. He doesn't ask the Lord, oh, please bring me out of here real fast. This is not what a devotee does. We have heard this many times, isn't it? Therefore, sometimes devotees feel a little bit awkward and not really comfortable with the idea of going back home, back to Godhead. Once Srila Prabhupada confronted this uneasy feeling when one of his disciples told him, oh Prabhupada, I don't want to go back home, back to Godhead. I want to stay here and preach birth after birth after birth. But Prabhupada was not impressed. He said, you should desire to go back home, back to Godhead, like anything. I've taken a few notes here from the books. I hope I can find it so fast. There, Srila Prabhupada encourages us to go back home, back to Godhead. In the introduction to his Bhagavad Gita, he writes, one should desire and hanker after that supreme kingdom. For when one attains that kingdom, he does not return to this material world. He must desire and hanker. Some of you are too tired to desire or hanker anything but a good rest. At another time, it's in the 15th chapter of the Gita, he says, one should be captivated by this information. It should be absolutely fascinating. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. Here, in other words, Srila Prabhupada writes very clearly that as a devotee, we are fully allowed to go back home, back to Godhead. We should desire this. Yes, I want to be, I want to go there. You know, sometimes there are movies about when the dam breaks and the water comes down and threatens to flood a village, and then there are helicopters who can take the victims of the flood onto dry land. And you know, you see people, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go, I do not want to drown here. So in the same way, a devotee should have this desire in his heart. I want to use this human form of life to go and be together with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Magala, you like to dance? Yes? So you should desire to dance with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a very, very good dancer. Once when Krishna gave a flute concert at the foothill of Govardhan, the best of the dancers, the peacocks, came and they started to dance. It was many peacocks, a whole ring of peacocks, and they shook their feathers and they very graciously danced while Krishna played on his flute. Then after some time, the king of the peacocks came with his ministers to Krishna. He put his head before the lotus feet of Krishna and cried one tear of ecstasy and said, "Now, Govinda, we want that you dance." Krishna accepted their request. The peacocks, the king and the ministers went back. All the animals of the Vrindavan forest came, and the Krishna started to play on his flute and dance at the same time. Hare Krishna. He danced very, very long. And then he used to, he made wheels. Do you know what it means to make wheels? Just like. He made wheels and played his flute at the same time, Mangala. This is certainly very, very good. It became so nice that all the inhabitants of Vrindavan used to also dance. See, Krishna used to go this way around, and then all the peacocks formed a circle and went the other way around. So he looked like a blue sapphire in green, in the green emerald stone, and it moved and moved. It looked like a kaleidoscope. Can you imagine a little bit? It must have been wonderful. What do you think, Dolores? It was so wonderful that, you know, everyone in Vrindavan just came. They went on the hills. Brahma and the devatas came and looked. It was, because Krishna is the best of all dancers, you must know. So we want to be part of this. We don't want to be part of this frustrating material world where we get so tired that the lecture becomes a torture and where we are so full of frustration. And Hare Krishna. So, yes, you can desire to be liberated, but not in the Mayavadi sense, that you want to just give up your individuality and merge in the Brahman, but in the Vaishnava sense, where you want to join the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his wonderful dance. I want to now read to you from Ripuk's book a few verses about this. The Vaishnava definition of liberation is given by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he says, "Iha yasya hareya dasye kamana manasa gira nikila svapyavastasu jivan mukti sauchate." Jivan mukta sauchate. One who engages in the transcendental service of the Lord in body, mind, and word is to be considered liberated in all conditions of material existence. This verse tells us that if we can engage our body, our mind, and our words in Krishna's service, then we are liberated. Are you sometimes afraid of death, if I may ask you? Sometimes when you think of the situation, I will be on my deathbed, and there will be so much discomfort, and there I will cuff, maybe mucus. There is so much pain. Do you sometimes, when you think about it, it's, one has some angst, some strach. If you want to be free, do you sometimes feel frustrated? Yes. I also feel sometimes frustrated. Life is not always very encouraging. If you want to be free, then you must, according to this verse, come on the level where your body, your mind, and your words are engaged in Krishna. I can guarantee you, you will lose all your fears, and private frustrations if you come on this level of spiritual existence. It is mystical and magical. It's the Vaishnava liberation which you can feel at that time. One who engages in the transcendental service of the Lord in body, mind, and word is to be considered liberated in all conditions of material existence. It's very important to understand that when you come to the state where you can engage body, mind, and words in this life, then death will be nothing else than going through a gate to your eternal spiritual existence. It is not fearful any longer. It is an easy journey. It might be like a visit to the dentist, where you also feel some pain for some time. But if you have a joyful mind, it's not so bad. You just go like, bravo! And then it's over. So, nothing to be too afraid of. So when a devotee, I want to read you another verse, which Prabhupada quoted very often, and I think you will like it very much. Listen very carefully, the Sanskrit is beautiful. Samashitaye parapalavam plavam mahatparam punyayasho murare bhavam budhivat sa padam 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 yat vipadam natesham. Meaning, for those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parampadam Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So, here it is said, someone who is engaged in the service of the Lord is entering into a very comfortable boat which will bring him over the ocean of birth and death to the spiritual world, and so on. It's a verse, in other words, which describes these two verses describe the Vaishnava definition of liberation. This is very important that you understand this. See, most of the devotees I have spoken with have this motive in coming to spiritual life. When you ask them, why did you become a devotee? They say, oh, the material world is misery, I want to leave it. Most of the devotees have this understanding. So I feel, because most of us are after liberation from misery, that's our motive, we need to understand what does it mean to have moksha or liberation in the Vaishnava sense. The two points you need to understand. One is devotional service. And the second is the lotus feet of the Lord and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. These two elements will bring you back home, back to Godhead. Hari Bol. Now we will go to the next point. The moment someone thinks of a liberation from material existence and going back home, back to Godhead, then the trouble will start. You will wake a sleeping dragon. Do you know Western mysticism? There are many, many stories about noble knights who fought against wild dragons. I think our Dayamayi will be able to tell you many stories of these. I know in Germany you have Siegfried, who fights with a dragon. I do not know what his name is. Does he have a name? What? Kraljevich. He's a Kraljevich, yes. All this, you know, in all these old mystical stories, this legends, you will find that these dragons come up who are very, very heavy. Usually they sleep, but they have a very light sleep. They are immediately awake if someone comes who threatens their existence. They immediately feel it. You just need to, these dragons are so terrible, you need to, they live in their cave, and then when you pass the cave, you can be 1 kilometer away. They sleep comfortably, but someone is in my territory. And they fly, and then they come down. You know this old mystical story. So when someone wants to leave Maya, the same thing happens. Immediately the material energy, Maya, will go like, what? And immediately start to attack. See, devotees will most probably not have of the most peaceful life. I have bad news for you. If you came for peace, this is the wrong place to be. You made a serious mistake in your calculation. When you just want to have a religious life, where you want to stay in this world, you know, live with God's blessings, have many children, a good house and a car, and get a good job in the Croatian work industry, and you prayed for God for this, you might get it. But if you want to go back home, back to Godhead, you will have to face a battle. So, Dolores, are you surprised? You look like, oh no. Nasi dragi bhakte. Whatever the inspiration equivalent is. My dear devotees, if you want to go to Ananda, the world of spiritual happiness and spiritual variegatedness, Maya will not sleep. She will come in a form, in many forms. One of her forms is Cupid. Hare Krishna. Who has 5 arrows. One is you become totally fascinated by someone's material body. Ooh. Then you become paralyzed. You cannot move on in your spiritual life so well because you are so much in Lubov. And then finally there's an arrow which makes you mad. Maya will come, for instance, in this form. Or Maya will come in the form of parents who cry, Nasadraga. Mirjana, or you know what is in a good creation, Angelia, or Angela, or Nasi Dragi Miroslav. Stay. It happened in my life. My grandfather was on his deathbed when he heard that I was become a monk. He started to die. He said, come, and give me the promise that you will become a materialist. You know, Maya was really strong. It was my dear grandfather, whom I loved, like I loved my record. Very strong love, you know, at that time. There were so many obstacles who come. Your own mind will become upset. Your false ego, because so often you are corrected. Have you noticed when you come to Krishna consciousness, it seems that nothing is right what you do in the beginning. No, and you hear someone, and then you read such verse like here. Herein is the reason for foolishness. Herein the reason for foolishness is described. And then you think, what is this foolishness? And you hear it's material lusty desires. And you notice, well, by this definition, I'm a fool. It's very, the false ego doesn't like it. I know that there are some I have heard in Germany, maybe not here, there are some devotees who say they can't read Prabhupada's books any longer because it paints the false ego so much. You hear that your treasured material desires are the sum total of all foolishness, and this hurts very much. They say, it's too much, I'm very sorry, it's too much for my false ego. I've seen that devotees in Germany who just don't read it because it's too painful for them. Yeah, so Maya will not sleep. In any way, she will try to keep you imprisoned in this material world. And the best way she does it is by influencing your taste. See, if you do have taste in something, that activity becomes very easy, isn't it? Like, for instance, if you eat Ravi Lochan's pizza. Have you ever eaten? Yes. You could easily become a multimillionaire with this pizza, Ravi Lochan. It is becoming famous even in Germany. Sometimes devotees ask me, who is this Ravi Lochan? I have heard about his pizza. Tell me all about him. So if you eat his pizza, you have taste for this. And everything goes very easy. But you know, to eat something which you don't have taste for, it's next to impossible. I remember as children we had to eat this Rizinus. Wow. You know, it was next to impossible to swallow even one teaspoon of this Rizinus oil. Have you eaten? Good. You have very merciful parents. But in Germany, I know, it was considered to be very, extremely healthy for children if they ate once a week Rizinus. And I know my parents had to engage the police to find me, because that one day I was gone. I did not like to eat this resinus at all. It was just too difficult. So Maya will also influence your taste so that you find the Krishna conscious activities tasteless. You think devotee association is not nice, kirtan is not nice, philosophy is entirely boring, so on and so forth. And Maya will make quarrels amongst devotees so that you don't feel at home in the temple. She will put the very weak devotees will make politics. Ooh, did you hear this? Did you hear that? And then the whole thing gets spoiled. This is how Maya works, because she does not want that you go back home, back to Godhead. She's like the dragon. Wow, let us see who is stronger, him or me. Ha 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 ha. And then the dragon comes and spits fire. Everything becomes like a desert and so on. Yeah. In the Bhagavatam, we hear a telling description about the taste of the non-devotee. Krishnadas Kaviraj says, topics about Krishna are like waves of nectar, or in Croatian language, are like Ravi Lochan's pizza. Topics about Krishna are like waves of nectar. If such nectar does not enter one's ear, the ear is no better than the holes of a damaged conch shell. You know, on a nice conch shell, you can blow a beautiful sound to greet the deities, but when the conch shell is damaged, it doesn't. It makes a sound like passing air. It is not very pleasant any longer. If such nectar does not enter one's ear, the ear is no better than the hole of a damaged conch shell. Such an ear is created for no purpose. No purpose at all. And then it's described how non-devotees are who have such ears. He says, do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? Men who are like dogs, hawks, camels and asses. Praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of the Lord Shri Krishna, the deliverer from evil. One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess of and marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord should be considered to possess ears like the holes of snakes. And a tongue like that of a jabat. And then it describes that when your legs don't go to the temple, they are like the logs of trees. When your eyes don't see the deity, they are like the eyes printed on the feathers of a peacock. And when your fingers don't engage in slujba, although you may have many jewels and golden rings on the finger, when they are not engaged in the slujba, they are like the fingers of a dead man. Ooh. But non-devotees think, no problem. This is just some religious description. This doesn't touch me at all. It doesn't impress me and convince me at all. Because the non-devotees just do not have taste in the spiritual activities. Something in which you don't have taste, you think it's no problem if I don't do it. Isn't it like, for instance, if you are a brahmachari, and you don't have any taste in sexual life. And you know, everyone goes crazy about it and paints pictures about it and sings songs about it, and you think, sorry, I have no acoustics. Not interesting. It is suffering. Sex is suffering. This is what you think, because you just don't have any taste. But someone who has great taste in this, he says, no, this is very valuable. You don't know. It is good for the psychology, for the personal growth and health, the highest pleasure. Be real. And so on. So, Maya gives a non-devotee a certain type of taste, and Krishna gives a devotee who really wants a different type of taste, which makes it very easy for him or her to practice spiritual life, because he just likes it so much. You want to hear a verse of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about his ukhast today? Are you sure? It's very intense. He says, even though I do not see the moon-like face of Krishna playing on his flute, and although there is no possibility of my meeting him, still I take care of my own body. That is the way of lust. In this way, I maintain my fly-like life. He says, to take care of a life where there is no realization of Krishna, he compares it to taking care of a fly-like life. Who cares about a fly-like life? Only for a few hours it flies around and then it goes and dies. Not very impressive. No one writes books about it. Yes. He says many things, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, we should somehow think in our lives how we can gain a taste and spiritual in Krishna consciousness. Because only if we have taste in Krishna consciousness will it be easy for us to overcome the influence of Maya. If we don't have a taste in it, Maya has won the battle. We will be easily going into the material world again. Maya's strongest activity is to steal our taste, because then it's very easy. We will stay in the material world forever. There is a very nice analogy which tells us how the taste in Krishna consciousness can come. And I feel this is maybe the most important part of this morning lecture. See, in order to practice spiritual life, you need the help of two people. Of jnana, that means knowledge, and of vairagya, that means detachment. Bhakti is compared with a beautiful woman who has two sons, jnana, knowledge, and vairagya, that is detachment from the material world. Now it is described that once Mother Bhakti went on a journey and had two sons, jnana and vairagya, were very, very slabby, weak, and sick. And they were lying down, practically not breathing any longer. Is your life sometimes also like this? That the jnana and vairagya are practically dead. You feel so many desires and so much, you're so unclear about your own spiritual life and how it develops. So, jnana and vairagya, they're very weak and they were lying and dying there. So at that time, Narada Muni came by. This is Veena, in thinking about Krishna. And he saw Mother Bhakti crying like a mother who cries for her dying sons. Mother, why are you crying? Look at my sons, said Bhakti. It is Kali Yuga. They are dying. They are almost dead now. I do not know how I shall bring them to life. Please help me. Radha Muni saw it was very serious. What if the rest of knowledge and the rest of detachment would die? That would mean no one would be able to return back to Godhead. So he immediately ran with the Narada Muni's highest speed to an assembly of devotees who were meeting in Hardwar, I believe, and listened to their discourses. And he asked the question, how can we save Jnana and Vairagya? It is very serious. Imagine at this moment, Gurgadatta and Mathuranath would start dying. We would immediately interrupt the lecture and only have one question. How can we save these wonderful personalities? Narada Muni stopped everything. He said, we must have a quick medicine which works. It's very serious. They are almost dead now. So the four Kumaras were there and they said, there is a very good medicine. Listen very carefully how the sons of Bhakti can be revived. You must Are you interested at all to hear this? I'm not sure. You must regularly. You must regularly read the Bhagavatam. This Bhagavatam has all the information. And it is a rasa shastra. Rasa shastra means if you read it, you will get a rasa, a taste in your heart. It has all the information which is required to go back home, back to Godhead. My dear devotees, I humbly request you, become regular readers of the Bhagavatam. Study the Bhagavatam. Enter into the mysteries of the Bhagavatam. Discuss it from all angles of vision. Become, enter into the world of this book. The Bhagavatam is not just some black print on white paper. It's a world you can enter. It's a world with knowledge, with all types of spiritual descriptions, the world you can meditate about, you meditate about the leelas. It's a world where you can write theater about. Yeah. It's a world which is very rich with metaphors and analogy. And most important, it is a rasa shastra. When you read it, you get taste. If you think about it and analyze it properly, you will get a taste. I have a godbrother who only reads Bhagavatam from morning till evening. Buriran Prabhu. He writes something about Bhagavatam. Some of you might have read his wonderful article, his book, Surrender Unto Me, with a nice Bhagavad Gita overview. He's now into the Bhagavatam. When you write him a letter, he always writes back a verse of the Bhagavatam. What do you think about this verse? Isn't it wonderful? Oh yes, it is very wonderful. Please write more such verses. So Narada Muni got this information, he kept it on his head, he went with the Bhagavatam, and then Jnana and Vairagya were almost dead. He was taking a cotton swab, you understand, cotton swab, before the nostrils, and it was moving very, very little. That means the life force was almost gone. And he read, and slowly Jnana and Vairagya begin to breathe normally. Then they opened their eyes and they sat up. And finally they began to dance in ecstasy. So this is the treatment which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also given. He described that the subject of the Bhagavatam is most relishable. Hare Krishna. So I want to now summarize the lecture which I have given this morning. Our beginning was to describe the real purpose of life is to go back home, back to Godhead, and be with Krishna. Then we were raising a doubt.
I gave a few days ago Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu a book as a present, and he saw the book. Was a very nice book. He was overwhelmed and he immediately placed it in gratefulness on the head. So Krishna's so grateful he placed the peacock feather on his head because it's an offering of love. He just doesn't want to put it anywhere. And he always has it. Yes, you can think about this. With a figure of beauty tinged with a hue of blue clouds. His unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. So, I will now make a little. I want to see if there are questions. If there are none, I will do one last thing. Then you're ready for tomorrow. I have to give you, however, some instructions for tomorrow. Explain to you what we will do. You can even tell. Well, yeah, it will be an experience you will tell for many weeks to come afterwards. Do you have any questions regarding this? Tapas, yes.
In separation, I heard that this worship in remembering Krishna's separation, this is something can be done if you're a little advanced. But the beginning of this remembering and separation is to feel separated from being Krishna conscious. And you can begin this, but I don't know if you have a comment.
Yeah. The area which we are discussing is an area which is
when the feeling comes. And you are full of envy. Very ultimately, we look with envious feelings towards Krishna. Oh, he enjoys so much, and I so little. And feel envious towards the Lord. That's the reason why you came into this world. You can give up envy by understanding Krishna loves you the way you are. You are his child. Even if you are not super qualified, will the father, you know, neglect a child who is not so super qualified? No, he will. Sometimes the father likes the not so qualified children more. For instance, imagine a father has one healthy son and a handicapped son. Will the father destroy the handicapped son? No, he will make all arrangements that the handicapped son has a good life. So we don't need to feel this feeling, oh, someone has more than me, and I'm not taken care of. And Krishna takes care of all his children. Therefore, one of his qualities is, sama, he is sama, equal. There's no reason to be envious on someone who is more beautiful or more rich or more talented than us. Krishna is so wonderful. He's equal-minded. Samuham sarvabhuteshu, I am equal to all living entities. He says in the Gita. Thank you very much for this beautiful garland. The unusual plant, you know, that one leaf grows in the other leaf. I've never seen this. Beautiful. Is someone else at this? Yes, Wallen? And you are envious. It is for us who were brought up in the Western civilization, it is unfortunately, it happens often that we are envious for all different types of reasons. The best way to overcome this, if you try to become close to this devotee by just learning the good things which that devotee has. For instance, if you see that someone is a better devotee than you, then analyze, why is it that this devotee is better? For what qualities? Is this devotee maybe more determined than you? And so on. And then try to imbibe this quality. Sometimes devotees are envious on other devotees because of a faulty vision. Their vision is, oh, this devotee can preach better, can distribute better, can sing better, and so on and so forth. And therefore, Krishna will love him more. This is actually a mistake. Prabhupada had to address this mistake in his devotees several times. See, there was a time when the book distributors were sometimes thinking that they were better devotees than the temple devotees. This was in the 1900s, in the 80s. I believe those older devotees in Croatia may also remember such times when this was there. Prabhupada had to address this because it caused serious discomfort and quarreling amongst the devotees. And he made it very clear that Krishna accepts each service equally. He accepts the service of the cook as equally. And then he told one story about an ant. The ant cannot do much service, I think you agree. Now, once it so happened that one pujari offered a flower with an ant on the flower to the lotus feet of Krishna. So this ant went to the lotus feet of Krishna. Prabhupada said, "Oh, ant did a great service. It kissed the lotus feet of Krishna." And in this way, was satisfying the Lord by his love. Everyone, even an ant, does service to Krishna. So often we are envious because of making this mistake. Oh, someone does more than me. Someone published a book and I can't even write a letter. and so on and so forth. But this is a material vision. Krishna is not a materialist. He is the highest spiritualist. And he sees just the mood. If the ant did all what it could do. So when you... devotional service doesn't mean that if you are an ant that you must become an elephant. It means you do what you can for Krishna. I wish you a lot of success in this. Yes, you could say it. It is the intention. Rupa Goswami describes devotional service, pure devotional service, as anukulyena Krishna nu. It means you do what is favorable for Krishna. If you have that motive that you want to please Krishna, that is devotional service. But if you have the motive that you want to please maybe yourself, oh, I do this, and then the world will say, yo, brodo, 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 shri. That is not on such a high level. The motive is very important. Someone can be a very glorious person, but his motive is for to get name, fame, and glory. And someone can be just a Mr. Nobody. Everything he does is wrong. Wrong, wrong. He has two left hands. He's unintelligent. Intelligent. And he likes to eat. And he always sleeps. He doesn't understand. But he wants to become a devotee. His motive is stronger than the motive of the glorious glamour person. I am also such a person with two left hands. I find it very comforting to meditate about this quality of Krishna, that he cares for the motive. Ah, Krishna, very good. We have chances. But at the same time, it's a very high, you know, to work on your motives is not so easy. Don't underestimate it. Everyone can do it, but it requires great sincerity of the heart. Anyone else? Predrag.
My life is the same. I want to touch my person.
Be kind to my false ego, please.
For motivation, what is the how the devotee should act? And how should the devotee think about it?
I personally think it's not a good preaching technique to hurt people's false egos. The most powerful weapon against false ego is if the person himself notices I have done something wrong. If you tell it to the person, it's not so effective sometimes. Then if the person notices on himself. You can only attack a person's false ego if the person loves you and has faith in you and even requests you. Otherwise, the person just can't see the point. A little while ago, we had the summer camp in Dole, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj suggested an exercise. You might like to do this exercise yourself. He said, go to a person who knows you very well, and with whom you are friends, and then ask that person in which area you can improve. So I had several devotees come to me, and they said, well, this is an exercise, please tell me, and so on. And I said, well, I have one condition. You just listen to what I tell you without immediately protesting and defending yourself. Then I will tell you. And then I told it in very kind words. It's very important that you use kind words, not just you are this and you are that and you are doing this wrong. Well, can you see you're always coming in the same situations in your life? I think it is because of this and that. The person felt very enlivened. But I thought it was important that Maharaj encouraged the devotees to do this with friends. You know, otherwise you think, well, this person doesn't like me anyways, and he will just say things to hurt me. It's not so effective. So in preaching, I personally do not think it's good to point out a person's false ego immediately. You will wake a sleeping dragon if you do it. You can preach by explaining situations. Sometimes it's like this, and some people react like this, and then the person will say, oh, that's me. It's like this. Oh, yeah. You know, and he begins to notice himself that's him. Yes. Well, this is also the definition of Vaishnava liberation. This verse of Rupa Goswami says that someone who serves Krishna with body, mind, and birth is liberated. It is correct. This is the. It's interesting. Sometimes in Krishna consciousness we hear two things which are paradox. We hear on one hand, you should desire to go back to the spiritual world like anything. Like Prabhupada, he says here, one should desire and hanker after the Supreme Kingdom. On the other hand, we hear, no, don't desire to go back home, back to Godhead, to see. So these are, there are many paradoxes. Another paradox is women are less intelligent, and we are all the same as birds or souls. Another paradox is we fell from the spiritual world, and we cannot fall from the spiritual world. There are many, I could go 10 points. What this means is that that spiritual truth is beyond the duality of material understanding. It's something much beyond yes and no, black and white. But we beginning devotees are very expert to just concentrate on one. For instance, Prabhupada said, we did not fall and we fall. I don't want to raise a political issue now, this is not my purpose, but some devotees just concentrated on we fell, and others concentrated on we didn't fell. And a huge battle came with devotees being expelled of the movement and so on and so forth. It's typical for the Western mind. Both is true. But we always pick one thing and build a party and go against the other point. We are such poor. Spiritual knowledge is in a higher realm than the dualities of material knowledge. 1, 2, 3. Wow. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry, what did you say? Krishna gives us knowledge to go back home, back to Godhead. That's in the purport, yes.
Actually, the thing is between the personal and the instruction system.
very good question. Can you repeat it in Croatian? It is a fact that devotees have a little difficulty to have direct instructions from the Bhagavatam, from the Super Soul, and from Srila Prabhupada. And they often feel that a spiritual master will solve this dilemma. But I personally do not think that necessarily a devotee's spiritual life is saved if he cannot learn to take instructions from a Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada. I think we often make it too easy for make it much too easy for us by thinking that just a diksha initiation will help my spiritual life. A diksha initiation is only helpful if we learn to appreciate the shiksha or spiritual instructions. Many devotees nowadays, even young devotees, think, oh, if I could only be initiated, if I can only get a diksha, everything will be all right. And then they think, if I can only get second initiation, then everything will be all right. Then they think, if I only can get sannyas initiation, then everything will be all right. If I can only become, then the next thing, if I can only become a guru, then everything will be all right for my life. If I can only become a GBC, then everything will be all right for my life. If I only can become a God, then everything will be all right for my life. These devotees never understand that everything becomes all right if you can follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada, and your own spiritual master. We see a phenomena that in our society the initiation is seen to be the most valuable thing. And I've seen many devotees who have gotten very fast initiations who never even cared about what their spiritual master tells them. You know, we always ask the question, who is your spiritual master? Even a young devotee. We ask the question, who is the diksha? We should ask the question, what did your spiritual master tell you? What is entirely inspiring, which I can also learn to improve my life? But these questions are never coming up. We have diksha, we think diksha is so important that we forget all about instructions and shiksha. If you do not learn to appreciate the instructions of the Gita and of Srila Prabhupada, you will also not be able to learn to appreciate the instructions of your spiritual master. Then your initiation will just be a social event where you get a name and belong to the club, where you can get the color saffron, or whatever it is. You can also chant one mantra. The real meaning of initiation is diksha. It means to give knowledge and to destroy sinful reactions. But here it is very important to note that this giving of knowledge, it is an ongoing process, the ongoing process of shiksha. Many of our devotees feel in our society something went wrong with the guru system. Some feel, therefore, we should not have any gurus any longer, because they feel, look, so many of our dearly beloved gurus have left their posts. Something must be wrong. Don't you see it? I personally am very convinced that Prabhupada wanted that initiations are given after his leaving us, because he said it consistently throughout his books and his teachings. It was full of quotations. But I personally feel also we did a mistake. And the mistake is that we put all the emphasis on diksha and not on shiksha. Many of my god brothers, they feel very frustrated because of this. They have many disciples who do not care about their instructions. They just want to be... It's mysterious. They just think, if I get initiation, if I get a name, and I chant pranam, and I also have a picture of my guru, and so on and so forth, then I'm saved. It doesn't work like this. You only can become saved if you can take shelter in the divine instructions. I think we have this wrong understanding because we, in the material world, it's like this. If you get your matura, you know, a stamp, matura, then you can enter the working society and get a nice post. I can tell you there are people who have the diploma who do not know anything. I have seen some of my... I don't have the matura myself. I became a devotee when I was 16. I left the gymnasium. And some of my disciples told me how they get the matura. I mean, it's wild. They just made a pizza for the people, you know, and say, give me the matura, please. For the... Some never came to school. Some always played chess at the back of the in the classroom because they were so totally bored. They didn't want to die in the schools, from boredom and so on. In our Western society, it's all right to know nothing, but you have a diploma. But in spiritual life, you can't cheat like this. I have an initiation, but I know nothing. And I never follow instructions. No problem. It is a problem in spiritual life. So because we have, there is so much emphasis, and I don't think it necessarily comes from the gurus. At least my god brothers, whom I know well, they very much stress that please do this, read Prabhupada's book, follow the instructions of the Bhagavatam. It's most important. But somehow our Western idea is, I just want to get my matura. This is enough for me. It comes from our experience in this Western civilization. I think we are the ones, in the sense of we, the disciples, are the ones who make the mistake and want place more value on diksha than of shiksha. You will see there are better devotees who are not initiated, and they will go more easier back to Godhead if they follow spiritual instruction. I know many devotees who are not yet initiated who follow spiritual instructions, and I know many devotees who are initiated who don't chant 16 rounds and do all kinds of things which is not healthy for their spiritual development. Initiation alone is not not so worthy if you don't follow instruction. Instruction is much more important than initiation. But if we follow instructions, we should get an initiation by all means. Not that I'm saying initiation is not important. Please do not, you know, like again, the paradox, you know, both is important. Very important. The scriptures tell us that without initiation into spiritual life, you will not be empowered to practice Krishna consciousness properly. And it's very important. But shiksha is more important. And therefore, our parampara is described to be a shiksha parampara. Sometimes we are criticized because our diksha is sometimes interrupted. For instance, it gets too long and too complicated. Sometimes they say, there are devotees who say that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not properly initiated in the sannyas order. His spiritual master was already dead. They say like this. They do not know the stream of shiksha. Do you know that Parikshit Maharaj was not initiated by Shukadev Goswami, Haribol? There was no fire yakya in the bank of the Ganga. Do you know this? He was initiated by someone, but Shukadev Goswami is the more important spiritual master because he's shiksha. He gives the shiksha. Shiksha is more important than diksha. Anyways, I don't want to make things complicated. This is a complicated discussion and so on. Hare Krishna. Now we come into the Rohini Sutta Prabhu time schedule. Quarter to ten. No problem for Rohini Sudha Prabhu, then he gets warmed up, and then he starts. But I'm just very different. So we will end here the class. And so sympathetic. This is a good example of someone who likes to talk about Krishna. No time limits, a very advanced Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi go nitai ki jai, go premanandi yari yari bo. And one thing before you all go, when we come to the Sunday feast,